It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live, and welcome to Just a Bit Outside. We got lots of great sports that we will touch on today, including the NFL coaching carousel. The PGA Tour has some competition. The Olympics wrap up. The Great American Race in Daytona. And we take a look at the Eastern Conference in the NHL. But first, Mike, how was your week?
Stark, happy family day.
You as well.
A hearty good wishes to you and the Starkman family. Pretty good. I mean, I get excited when I see the rain and the snow thaw a bit, thinking we're getting closer to golf season, and then we get hit with another snowstorm. So I guess we're not out of the woods yet. March is a little tricky, so we got to just ride it out a few more weeks, I suppose.
I do remember some years, I guess back in the day, having a couple golf rounds in March. But then I also remember like playing like late March, couple rounds, and like, wow. And then April was brutal, and you put the clubs away for another 3 weeks. So
yeah,
let's hope for sunny days soon.
Yeah, for sure. Aside from that, a lot of sport watching this weekend for me. There's, I know not your cup of tea, but there was a big wrestling pay-per-view and some big news over the past week. So that
give us a tidbit.
Well, the Cody Rhodes has left AEW. He was an executive VP there. I know.
Let me put my shocked face on.
I should have told you to sit down first. And I'm glad you are actually sitting down for this news. But yeah, so he left, and then WWE did their big pay-per-view over in Saudi Arabia. They usually do one a year, and pretty good. So that was Saturday, and then Sunday was just watching the Badgers game and the race and the golf and, you know, whatever else was on the airwaves.
So you did see the Badgers game live with Juwan Howard punching the other coach?
So I missed that. I had turned it off at that point because the game was over. I mean, you know, at that point, you know, Wisconsin was up 16, I believe, and they called the timeout, which was, you know, ridiculous with seconds left. You're up 16. And I know the coach made an explanation, but, you know, kind of pointless. But, you know, I had turned it because at that point, I think, you know, the golf had started or the race. So I was kind of tuning in to see what was happening on that end, and kind of caught it after through Instagram, saw that something had happened. So I had to go back and watch it. So interesting.
Very
interesting end to a big conference game. And, you know, unfortunate. You don't want to ever see people exchange hands, but sometimes that happens in the heat of competition, and, you know, that's the way it goes, I guess.
And now it looks like he's suspended for the rest of the regular season. Right. So we'll see how that affects Michigan's chance of even getting in the tournament. But I want to go back. You're talking about wrestling there. Not sure if you saw a funny clip. I don't know what's going on in Vancouver, but Bruce Boudreaux has become this like all but known hero in Western Canada. Now they're chanting his name out at every game. He's got the team hot again, trying to get into the playoffs, and he'll answer about any question that the media asks him. He's really good with the media, and he's good when he was in the media too, I should say. So someone asked him about wrestling and what his favorite wrestlers were, and he named off five, no problem. A couple of them I never even heard of before, but made me think, Mike, what's your top five wrestlers of all time?
Of all time. Yeah, I did see that. That was a pretty good clip. And it's funny because I kind of anticipate you bringing that up. So I made a somewhat of a list, but these things change often. So all time, top five. Fifth, The Rock. Legendary.
Okay, good one. Legendary. Yeah. You got to smell what he's cooking.
Exactly. The XFL is what he's now cooking. Number four, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Very good.
Beer. The Texas Rattlesnake.
Them. Yep.
I like beer. Number three, the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be, Bret the Hitman Hart, Calgary's own.
Yes.
Number two, Hulk Hogan. I think everybody was a Hulkamaniac at some point in their childhood. No longer, though. And number one, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Interesting selection. I would have thrown the Macho Man in there, maybe the Ultimate Warrior, greatest entrance of all time. But yeah, stop me if I've told this story before, but I once went to go see Bret the Hitman Hart at Maple Leaf Gardens and had a little access to go down under stage or whatever they call it, backstage, I guess, to possibly see him through a connection. And I was like, I'm going to get his glasses. You know, he gave these like 50 cent glasses out to a kid every time. So I'm there, I'm standing there. They introduce me to him. He shakes my hand. I'm like, he's going to put those sunglasses on me. I'm like, I don't know, 6 or 7. But there was like a 3-year-old right beside me, and he bent over and gave that kid the glasses. I almost snatched them away. I was so upset.
You should have. He probably would have appreciated a nice little tactical headlock or something. So funny enough, those glasses you mentioned, I actually got a pair for Christmas signed by him for my brother and sister-in-law. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
We'll have to get you wearing them, post that picture. This weekend, busy weekend for me and the family. Obviously, family weekend, but lots of hockey going on for the boys and stuff like that. But I wanted to touch on one thing I did watch because, you know, no football on. So my focus was kind of elsewhere and what was going on. I was watching Leafs too. But I tuned in for the NBA skills competition on Saturday night, which was kind of after the Leafs game. I thought, I'll just put it on. There's nothing else really on. I can't remember what the late hockey game was. And I always kind of liked watching the dunk competition as a kid. It was cool. And you know, Vince Carter, Kobe Bryant, obviously way back to Michael Jordan. There's been some iconic moments in this event, and I really hadn't watched it in the last few years. I think ever since Blake Griffin jumped the car, I was like, oh, this kind of jumped the shark for that term. But I was like, you know what, I'm gonna watch a little bit of it. And sure enough, watching it reminded me why I stopped watching it. It was one of the worst sports events of the year. I mean, these guys were taking so long to set up these dunks, and it would take them about 3 or 4 attempts before they could even do it, if they could do it. And by the time they actually did complete it, we already knew what the dunk was going to look like because they'd been trying it for 20 minutes, it felt like, and putting on costumes and setting it all up. And it just was really bad. And as much as people really carve the NHL All-Star Game, obviously here in Canada, they talk about it a lot more, and the skills competition and trying to make it a good thing. I mean, the NBA skills competition was just brutal. It was tough to watch, and the highlights were even worse. I thought it was the worst sporting event I've seen. They need to make some changes to this thing.
Ever since Vince dominated, what was that, 2000, like early 2000s or 2000, it's never been comparable. I think he set the bar so high 22 years ago, whenever it was, that it's just not the same.
Yeah, so I mean, but I really didn't have too much time for sports watching this weekend. I was at the rink 7 different times over the 3 days here, 5 different games, so a busy weekend. And I'm showing great control as a hockey dad. I think I want a pat on the back. You know, there's lots of crazies out there. As we start playing more and more teams from around the province, we're getting to see a nice picture of them. I've told some stories about some fans opening doors and slamming glass, all that different stuff. So my son's 7. I mean, these kids are still pretty young, and one game he played great this weekend, you know, for him, he's by no means a superstar. And one game he was just barely moving out there, and it was driving me nuts. I was so frustrated sitting up in the stands, and my wife wasn't there. She was at my other son's game. So I was texting her. I'm like, I think I'm going to go down there and bang on the glass and tell him to get his ass moving. And she's like, oh my God, don't do that. And you know what? I realized she was right, because it would probably embarrass him and make him not want to really play hockey anymore and be like, all my friends saw you do that. Plus, it would make me look like an absolute lunatic. I mean, and I stopped myself and I said, you know what? If he wants to just skate in a couple circles in the corner and stare off the stands or the clock, and you know, he's daydreaming about his Legos or Super Mario or something. So I didn't do anything. I just sat there quietly and enjoyed the show and had a couple laughs watching it. So I think I want an attaboy for showing some control.
Yeah, good for you. Not yelling at people for opening doors or getting into heated exchanges. So that's good, man. You're progressing in your hockey dad.
Thank you. But you know, I'm starting to really get into the minor hockey world a little bit more. Obviously, I've been out of it since I stopped playing. So a good 20 years, I guess, of being out of it, but now I'm getting into it. And I want to bring something else up related to kids hockey that happened over the last couple of weeks locally here for us. And Mike, I sent you this viral video. Did you get a chance to watch it?
I did.
So it's this 9 or 10 year old boy who did the Michigan move. Unbelievable. And I'll, you know what? I'll get our amazing social media team to post it on the Jabo Instagram. So go over to our Instagram and have a look at it. It's J-A-B-O pod. And you'll be able to see this amazing play. So for those of you that didn't see it or just listening to this, I'll kind of set the scene for you of what went on. So over the last couple of years, you know, you've seen a lot of NHLers, pros around the world, junior players. They've been doing a move called the Michigan. Now, the Michigan is when a player is behind the net and he's able to scoop the puck up onto his stick and then stuff it into the top shelf of the net for a goal. And it was first done, I think, back in the 90s by a player who played for the Michigan Wolverines, the University of Michigan. So they started calling it the Michigan, or the Mishy, as the kids say it now. So, and this season alone in the NHL, I think it's happened about 3 or 4 different times. They did it in the skills competition as well. So it's becoming pretty regular. And of course, there's the old dinosaurs out there like John Tortorella, who says it's bad for the game and this isn't how the game should be played and kids shouldn't be picking up this, and the youth are watching these pros do it, and it's a bad look for our game. So last week, a 9-year-old for the Oakville Rangers, his name's Cohen Heisey, he pulled the move off in a playoff game to score a goal. You've got to go see it. But I want to say to all the parents, coaches, players, and even media saying this kid shouldn't have done it, you're a loser, a huge loser. This is why not many kids want to really play hockey anymore, and they're looking at other sports. They can't be creative. Or if they do something creative like this, they're being called selfish. And it's brutal. I'm sick of it. I mean, look at baseball now. It's changed so much. They now can be creative. Every kid in high school, when he hits a home run, he pimps it, throws the bat, does something cool, points at all his teammates. They're just having fun out there. Why can't we do it in hockey? In basketball, creative dunks all the time. You see the highlights. It causes everyone in the gym to stand up and cheer, and they're catching it on their phones and posting it all over social media. Even in football, the one-handed catch, it's a normal thing now. All these amazing wide receivers can do it. It's a sight to see, and you see it all the time on SportsCenter. I mean, this kid's 10 years old. He clearly loves the game of hockey. He practices the hell out of this. Plus, let's remember, he scored a goal, which was legal. Isn't that the whole point of the game, to score goals? And that's what he did to help his team. And for the complainers saying that, you know, back in my day, they would have knocked his head off if he tried to do this, just shut it. That's not hockey anymore. The game is better nowadays anyway. Think about this. Zion Williamson. Everyone knows who this guy is. He was a YouTube star since he was, 15, with these amazing dunks that he was doing in high school and then obviously in college at Duke. He was on there because he was doing electric things and being creative with the basketball, not because he was a solid defender. I mean, we got to start letting these kids be creative and have fun at the sport. Nothing, it doesn't need to be so regimented about the way we play our games. It's not the way it was, you know, 25, 30 years ago. And Mike, you know what the coolest thing about this kid is? 15 years ago, his dad pulled the exact same move in the Austrian league. It's unbelievable. You got to see it side by side. What a sight to see. So you got to go check it out. And let's remember, let's try to enjoy the highly skilled players in hockey instead of, you know, always talking about the tough guys back in my day. They used to hit and throw punches and hook guys. That hockey is gone. This is the new way of hockey. And so what? If this kid never plays in the NHL, he's got this video that's going to last a lifetime. He'll be able to show families and friends forever saying, look what I did in a playoff game. I thought it was the coolest thing.
Very impressive. I've never played the game myself, so I don't have the same, you know, experience or appreciation for certain aspects of it, but just seeing it, I mean, when you sent it to me, I was like, wow, this is damn impressive. Like, and to pull that off and, you know, have the confidence in yourself to make a move like that in a game, in a playoff game, you know, takes a lot of talent. So good for him.
Yeah, at 9 or 10 years old, I just didn't want to go offside. I couldn't figure out that rule. This kid's picking the puck up on a stick and put in the top shelf. Good for him. Thumbs up from the just a bit outside guys for him. But hey, we got lots of great topics, so stick around. Coming up right after this break, we're going to hit them all. While some NFL coaches are being called geniuses, others are losing their jobs as the league goes through changes, and that will be our T1. Over the last month, as the NFL playoffs have rolled on through to the Super Bowl, 9 different coaches have lost their jobs. Some from good teams looking for a shakeup, and some from bad teams that had no other choice. Mike, which change surprised you the most?
I mean, you know, there were some jobs. I think, you know, Brian Flores in Miami, I think he did a good job with that team for so many years, and I was genuinely surprised that he was let go. Good coach, and like I said, I think the expectation Miami was that they were going to be bad, and I think they had, you know, 2 winning seasons under him, so certainly overachieve with that group. So that was surprising. I think a lot of the other ones, you know, it was, there wasn't much shock to a lot of the changes. I think, you know, we talked about Sean Payton stepping down. That was probably a shock. But a lot of the other openings, you know, it was either results or guys who had been in jobs for a couple of years that, that didn't really, you know, get anything going over the course of 3 or 4 seasons or some more. So, the one hire that kind of shocked me was Lovie Smith in Houston. You know, his name wasn't really mentioned a whole lot. I know he was on their staff last year, but when you think about it, you know, he's close to 200 games as a head coach in the NFL. 2015 coach of the year, took the Bears to the Super Bowl that season. Coached at Illinois as head coach for a couple of years and then came back into the NFL. So, I mean, his resume as an NFL coach speaks for itself. The only thing that shocked me was his name wasn't really mentioned too much. It just kind of came out of nowhere. But, you know, they're a team that's rebuilding. They need a lot of help, and it's good that they have an experienced coach at the helm.
Yeah, NFL coaches, you know, there is turnover. It's not like the NHL where midseason guys are getting fired and quickly new guys are brought in and teams are getting turned around. The NFL kind of lets the season play out, and then obviously you got the Black Monday right after the end of the season where a lot of coaches get fired, and this year it trickled on a little bit longer as teams started to evaluate who they had, and we saw 9 changers, which seems like a lot. I mean, pretty much almost a third of the league was flipped over on coaches. I agree with you. I think Lovie Smith, I think it was actually a great play by Houston bringing him in. He replaced David Culley only after 1 year, so they didn't really give him much of a chance. But let's be honest, he never really had a chance because he showed up thinking he was having a top 5 quarterback in Deshaun Watson, who never played a game for him. So now Lovie Smith's got to come in. He was the 2005 AP Coach of the Year. You mentioned him with the Bears and how well he was, but I think that he's going to be a player's coach. He's a lot different than what we're seeing other teams hire in these offensive-minded guys, similar to Sean McVay and his tree of coaches that are now being hired. We're seeing Lovie Smith, who's going to be hard on these guys. He's going to keep them accountable. He's trying to change the culture of the Houston Texans, which is a hot mess for the last 5, 10, 15 years. They can't seem to get it together. So I'm hopeful, because I do like Lovie Smith, I'm hopeful that he's going to be able to turn around this Houston team.
Yeah, and be given an opportunity to do that. I think, you know, the previous regime prior to Culley there, Bill O'Brien kind of depleted their team of picks and made some real interesting trades. So they're kind of restocking the cupboard, so to speak, in Houston, and hopefully they give Lovie the time to get things back on track. But, you know, some of the other ones, I mean, a lot of names that were kind of in the mentions for interviews ended up in places. I think the one that kind of surprised me was Josh McDaniels leaving the Patriots again to take the Raiders job. I think we all kind of assumed he would just kind of ride it out in New England there, but his name popped up and the Raiders got the deal done. So we'll see what happens.
What's the deal in Miami with this Mike McDaniels guy? Mike McDaniel, I should say. He seems so odd in all these interviews, and the media's treating him odd because that's what he's like. He's 38 years old. He was the offensive coordinator in San Francisco. So again, one of these offensive coordinator type guys. I feel like there's a ton of these coordinators now getting jobs where you don't know too much about them, but they seem to be getting these head coaching jobs and they look and sound just like a bunch of guys who have never played the game and all they ever did was smoke pot and play NFL Madden and that makes them qualified for a head coaching job. I think the players look at these guys like, who are you and what makes you qualified to come into an NFL clubhouse change room and start talking to us about how you're going to change things around? That's why these coordinators sit up in the top booth. Keep them away from the players and just give in the signs, and just like you're playing Madden at home. I don't know if a guy like McDaniel is going to be able to help Miami become a better football team or gain any trust from the players.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, like you said earlier, a lot of these coaches come from the coaching trees of successful head coaches, right? Sean McVay being one, recently Kyle Shanahan, where McDaniel coached last year in San Francisco. A lot of guys who have coached with Shanahan or for Shanahan, have found jobs. Shanahan, McVay, a lot of their guys have kind of found head coaching roles. Matt LaFleur, Packers head coach, he, you know, was with McVay and Shanahan. So I think a lot of times they see what teams see what works around the league and which teams have success either offensively or defensively and try to implement that with certain coaches. So we'll see what happens. You know, interested to see how these new coaches do. And, you know, we'll be, I know it was the first Sunday without football, but the calendar, as things get closer to March, you know, we got the scouting combine coming up here in March, and then free agency, the new league business year starts March 16th, and free agency will kick off after that. There's a negotiating period March 14th to the 16th. So, you know, while we're not playing right now, I think the news is going to start picking up with roster decisions and trades and cuts and getting ready for free agency in March.
Do you think the NFL cares at all about any of these competing or spring leagues popping up, potentially harming them or taking any of their players?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, the NFL actually announced a partnership with the XFL where they're going to come back in 2023 and kind of work with the NFL in implementing maybe some innovative ways to adapt the game. Focusing on player safety, obviously, is one that is top of mind. So they'll work in partnership with the XFL. I think at the end of the day, both the USFL, which is kicking off here in April, and the XFL will be their own separate leagues and operate that way. And I think it's going to give a lot of opportunities for players who, you know, aren't in the NFL, aren't in the CFL, guys who maybe haven't got anywhere after college, to have another chance and make something of it, of their football career. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I don't know what the appetite is for spring ball. It's not been too successful in the past, but we'll see. I mean, more football is never a bad thing. So we'll see how it all shakes out here.
And as you mentioned, it was our first Sunday without football, so our focus was on golf, but for multiple different reasons, and that will be our T2. The Genesis Open was this week at beautiful Riviera Golf Course as Joaquin Niemann went wire to wire to win his second PGA event. Although there was a strong push from a great field, including Colin Morikawa, who finished second, the tournament was never in doubt. Mike, before we talk about Crazy Phil, what did you think about the Genesis?
Solid performance from Neiman. He opens up with back-to-back 63s Thursday, Friday. And, you know, didn't put in cruise control, but he was pretty steady. And I think I said to you over the weekend, it kind of felt uneventful just because, agreed, you know, he had been in the lead and he really didn't let it up. Some guys got close, like we said, Morikawa. But all through the tournament and obviously into Sunday there, he just looked in complete control, never really phased much. You know, he got up there with the birdie on 8, chip in on 11 for eagle. And, I mean, just really in control and never let up.
Yeah, this is one of the nicest courses, and the players talk about it. That's why you got all these top players out there. I think all top 10 players in the world were there this past weekend. It's a great course, a great tournament. I know it got a little bit cold, so I'm sure some of the players didn't like that. But it's very difficult, and what they say is you can't just drive the ball, chip on, and it's a putting contest because the green is so tough to get your ball to stay on, and there's tight, narrow greens, and they put the pins in interesting locations that make you attack the green differently. So when some of these players and some of these broadcasters saw that Neiman went 63-63 to start, they were like, wow, do you know how impressive that is? And you're right, he didn't really glide to the end. There was a little bit of rough road, but after 63-63, he didn't really need to worry too much about it. A lot of good players did struggle, and a lot of players were trying to figure out their game. This is some of those guys getting back into competition that maybe didn't do Hawaii or some of the early California courses. They're now starting to ramp it up, getting ready for the Players, and then obviously into the Masters in about a month and a half, which is going to be great. So it was our first time seeing some good competition, and I was excited for it on Sunday. I was ready to sit down and watch it, and there just wasn't that excitement. So there was other things I had to look for in the golf to intrigue me. Victor Hovland, one of the guys I did pick, we'll get into that later. He did something interesting that this course is going to have to look out. On the 15th tee, which is a bit of a dog leg right, he can't kind of draw the ball away that well. So instead, he hit his tee shot up the 17th fairway and kind of hooked it around to bring the ball down onto that fairway, which gave him a different look onto the green. He did it all four rounds, was pretty successful, finishing in the top five. So it might be something that this course is going to have to look at. Do they put some trees up to block them? I thought that was really cool. Funny instance, on a drivable par 4. Can't quite remember what hole it was, but Thomas decided to lay up and just hit an iron down the middle. So he was about to hit, and Morikawa was thinking, oh, there's people on the green. He's got to wait. He starts walking out right in front of JT. Everyone had to say, whoa, stop, before JT smacked the ball right in Morikawa's face. He was so embarrassed. I thought that was pretty cool. But another thing that happened, I counted at least 5 or 6 times, and there's some specific players that do this more than others, but it drives me nuts when a golfer of this caliber playing on the PGA Tour hits a shot and drops their club or lets their club fly out of their hands like, oh my God, what did I just do? And then the camera pans and the ball lands perfectly on the green 10, 15 feet away. Enough of this. It drives me nuts because if the club's flying out of my hands, I'm hitting it 3 fairways to the right. These guys, perfect shots onto the green, they're so dissatisfied with, made me lose my mind. I was yelling at my TV.
Yeah, the Morikawa Thomas thing. I think it was the 10th hole because it is a drivable, and Morikawa actually weighed it, drove the ball, and eagled that hole, if I'm not mistaken, on Sunday.
Chipped in.
Yeah. So that was a pretty funny exchange between the two of them. But yeah, I agree with the drop in the club. It's like, oh my God, where's this going? And then, like you said, perfect yeah. shot. So
what did you think of seeing Tiger speak?
You know, not surprising. He didn't give much away. I think, unfortunately for him, it's obviously a work in progress, right? And like he said, my plan is to be back on tour this year. I just can't tell you when. And, you know, we remember back a year now from that crash. And like he said on Sunday to Jim Nance, he said, I almost lost my limb. I'm lucky to have my limb. And when you think about that, it's like, you know, it really puts the whole thing into perspective of just how bad this could have been and how lucky he is. And, you know, we saw him play before the holidays there with Charlie. And I think it kind of all gave us a glimmer of hope that he would be, he'd be teeing it up come April. But I mean, we'll see what happens. He, like he said, he will be back. It's just, he's got to see how he rehabs.
He looked healthy. Yeah. He looked a lot better than he did last year when he came on the broadcast, whatever was going on there. But it was encouraging that he did speak about playing, as you mentioned. A weird point was when Faldo says, is there a flat course that you could see yourself playing on? And Tiger quickly goes, there are no flat courses on the PGA Tour. So I don't know where you think I'm going to have to play that. Any course he plays, you know, it's not just the four rounds. He's got to do a practice round or two. He's got to do maybe a little bit of the pro-am, how many ever holes. So it's 5-6 days of being on his feet every day. And that's tough for someone at his age with multiple back surgeries, let alone rods and screws in your leg, your back leg that you're pushing off. So I think the Masters is out. It doesn't sound like he'll be able to do that. Maybe his goal is to play at the Open in St. Andrews. So we'll see. But, you know, it was great seeing him talk. It started to make me think, you know, we got the Manning cast in football, and how cool is that? Those two guys, the brothers, chit-chatting, an alternative way to watch the broadcast. Imagine having Tiger or a couple other professional golfers doing kind of a golf Manning cast where they're talking about the players, they're talking about the shots, they're talking about shots that they've done or how they would do those shots. I know you get Faldo and a couple others doing the commentary, but having like real conversations with like a Tiger would be so cool as he was watching the players.
Yeah, it was great that he kind of stuck around with Jim and Nick and provided some commentary talking about, you know, what kind of shots he would make and interacting with the other broadcasters. So that was cool. You know, it added an element to the broadcast. And I'm sure, you know, when Tiger decides to call it a day, I'm sure there will be plenty of opportunities for him. But he did make it sound like, you know, the par three contest at the very least is something he'll do at Augusta. So
that would be cool.
I mean, hopefully we'll hold out hope, but doesn't sound
promising. But
no,
you know what,
not right now.
The other big topic leading up to this tournament, really the only topic that was coming out of golf, was this Saudi Golf League, the Super League. And, you know, Phil obviously makes the statement that he's considering it, but he really says he's only considering it because he wants to make the PGA a better place and pushing them to allow the players more freedom and more of their own content, being able to own it. And he called the Saudi group crazy mother effers and kind of mentioned, you know, they're doing some bad things out there. But he's also says he's considering taking their money. He's all over the place, and it was causing a lot of concern. And quickly, I mean quickly, over the weekend, player after player started coming out, not only against him, but against the association with this Saudi Super League, statements all over the place. Golfers we thought that were for sure going, DJ, Bryson, they quickly came out and said, hey, I'm sticking with the PGA after all this. It scared everyone off. You clearly could tell that agents were calling their players and saying, hey, you know, we were considering this. Well, it looks like Phil might be doing it, and he's getting backlash like crazy. We need to stick around with the PGA Tour. We need to make an announcement right now. We saw announcements from DJ, Bryson, even Justin Thomas spoke out against someone who he was close with in Phil, someone who he's played Ryder Cups with. So it was a wild week of stories around the PGA. I thought it was funny. Even Harry Higgs sent out a tweet saying, no one reached out to me from the Saudi League, but I want to make it clear I'm sticking around the PGA as well. So some guys were having some fun with it. I think the Saudi League is done for now. There's no one of consequence that's going to go over there. No big name players. If they're going to have 40 players, it's going to be boring, and there's not going to be any big names. So looks like everyone's sticking around the PGA Tour, which is a good thing.
Yeah, some rumors out that they had, you know, 20 guys signed up, 20 players, and some players had not talked about it publicly. Names that were mentioned, Adam Scott, Ian Poulter, Lee Westwood, along with Phil, their names have been
older
mentioned.
Names.
Yeah, and I mean, Greg Norman, who's kind of heading things up on that side, you know, they've put a lot of money investing into the Asian tour as well. So there probably will be some form of a tour there if they do have these 20 golfers that are rumored. But there's a lot of money at play. And I mean, it's a lot of guys now have come out and said that they're staying at the PGA Tour. They want to play where, you know, the top players in the world are. And, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. But it's been an interesting story.
Yeah, and now the interesting thing would be, when does Phil play? Where does he play again? Does he play on the PGA Tour ever again? Does he come back and defend his championship at the PGA? I don't know what his plan is now, but he needs to reevaluate everything he's done because he had a bad week. Bad week. This weekend, the Winter Olympic Games came to a close as quietly as they came in, and that will be our T3. Finally, the snowflake holding the Olympic flame was put out, and just like that, the Winter Games that no one thought would happen and then no one cared about were over. But we did see some great stories and a massive win for Canada in women's hockey. Mike, what was your overall thoughts on these games?
Good for Canada, 26 medals, finish, was it fourth highest total behind Norway, the ROC, and Germany. So a good showing for our Canadian athletes. You know, like I said, a bit difficult to follow as much as you normally would with the time difference. It was, you know, I felt like you really had to make an effort to watch certain things from a timing perspective, you know, understanding that it might be 8 o'clock, but does that mean it's AM or PM? So I kind of struggled with that, as I mentioned, but you know, great for the Canadian women, stayed up for that game. Fantastic finish, to get the gold, and a record setting gold at that. A lot of tournament records were set by our Canadian women's team.
Yeah. If you haven't watched women's hockey recently, the Canada and US, they're outstanding. Now, yes, the other countries have a ways to go to catch up, and they're going to work on that, and hopefully they'll get there. But these two teams are outstanding. Canada moves the puck so well. I was so impressed with how they were breaking out of their zone and setting up on the power play. It looked just like NHL players doing it, and they were moving the puck fast, hard, getting into the open spots, and they shoot the puck quick. I mean, the NHL game doesn't really have slap shots anymore either, and these women can snap the puck just as good as these guys. They skate so fast, and the game was even a little bit physical, which is nice to see. Not open ice body checks, but there's battles in the corner and battles in front of the net, so that was good to see. Canada easily could have been up 4 or 5 goals in that first period. They even had a goal called back for offside. But, you know, when these two teams play, it's always close. And hats off to the USA team. They battled back, finding a way to make it a close game right down to the very end, scoring to make it a 1-goal game. It always seems that these two play a close game for gold. I hope these women, after this, you know, I hope they really get a good pro league, so they have somewhere to go play and build their game and then come back to their national teams for these big events. I think that's the next step for them.
Yeah, 100%. I checked the stat. NBC, which kind of showed the Olympics in the U.S., there are 3.54 million viewers for the women's gold medal game. I think they said more than any NHL game that season, and in a couple seasons, which, you know, is fantastic. Canada, I'm sure the numbers were high too, but didn't find anything on those. But agree with you, a league is sorely needed, and you know, that hopefully will be coming down very soon.
Yeah, and as we talk about, you know, winning hockey for Canada and, yep, and how important that is, and it's so important to Canadians. I mean, we didn't do well in the men's, but it didn't seem to really matter without the NHL players there. But the second sport that we claim to be ours and claim to be the best at is near and dear to your heart, Mike, and that's curling. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think we just got one bronze medal out of the three events.
Yeah, correct.
So there's a concern with the way we are doing things with curling, and there's a problem, and I think I have a solution for it and how we can fix it. Now, we have teams from each province, and they compete for national titles, which is fine. We see it in the Scotties and the Brier, and, you know, you represent Ontario, Saskatchewan, Alberta, whatever it may be, and you got a chance to go on and win that and become Team Canada and then go on to the Worlds, and we usually do good in those as well. But for some reason, Olympics seems to be a little bit of an issue lately, and we're playing global talent now. These are teams that are put together, and they work together for months in advance before they show up to the Olympics. And we're just picking a team that wins a tournament, essentially, to represent our country. It'd be like if at the end of the NHL season, they said, oh, you know what? The Vancouver Canucks had the most points out of all the Canadian teams. So let's let those guys go represent our country at the Olympics. That's not how things are done. We have a committee. We have GMs. We have coaches. They get together. They evaluate the talent, and they select the players for the hockey team. Happens in the men's, happens in the women's. We make changes as we get closer to the events. Bring in the better players. If someone's injured, not playing well, we bring in someone new and we shake the lineup out. Why don't we do that for curling? Why don't we evaluate who are the best four or five players in the men's and four or five best players in the women's, put them together, pick the team, let them train together, coach them up, build their strategies, and then send them to the Olympics? This is what we need to start doing. I'm demanding change in the Canadian Curling Association.
Respect your opinion, but completely disagree.
My opinion's way more valid than yours, so I win that argument.
Well, like, this is the thing, right? Like, I felt bad for Rachel Holman and John Morris, who are the pair in the mixed doubles, because they were essentially picked with no qualifying tournaments permitted and sent on very little time, very little notice. Their prep time was minimal, so they were put in an unfavorable position from the beginning. In terms of the men's and women's, there's a whole qualifying process. There's tournaments. Teams are basically built for these four-year runs. You can't just take four skips and form a team. That's not how curling works. So I gotta dispel your theory, man.
Mama Starkman disagrees with you, so... Now, from cold, slow winter sports to fast cars in the Florida heat, as the Daytona 500 is our T4. In what many call the Super Bowl of auto racing, the Daytona 500 was held this past weekend with a rookie, Austin Cindric, winning the race in OT. But one of the main stories at Daytona is always the crashes and who caused them, as Brad Keselowski was the bad guy this year. Mike, how was your need for speed this weekend?
Good. Daytona 500, like I said, it's their premier race of the year. It's their Super Bowl, if you will. And it's always the first race of the season. So, and the track is fast down in Daytona. All the drivers are reaching high speeds, and, you know, the unfortunate part is that there's always a few crashes and cautions, and that causes a lot of problems, especially when your driver's near the front of the pack and they got to reshuffle for a caution. So, you know, good theater, as always, as the Daytona 500 provides us. And a rookie takes the checkered flag. So that's big. A lot of guys have been racing in this race for years, haven't won. And, you know, Austin Cindric gets it after only a handful of starts last season and getting the promotion from the Xfinity Series. So, you know, a good race. And thankfully, nobody, with all the crashes that there were, thankfully, everybody came out healthy. And we'll go again next week.
Now, I didn't watch any of this race. I had it on a side TV for a little bit while I was watching the golf. I have some issues with NASCAR. I'm going to get into that, but this is a perfect time for me to at least use my time to speak about how I have actually been to the Daytona 500. Amazing event to see live. I had a ton of fun. It was beautiful down in Florida in a cold February up here when I went. And I went the year after Dale Earnhardt had passed away at the actual race in a crash. And his son was racing in it. And it was so cool because Dale Earnhardt, for those of you who didn't know, he raced car number 3. So on the third lap of the Daytona 500, every single person stood up in silence and put 3 fingers up in the air. It was one of the most chilling events I've ever been to in sports to feel it, especially as someone who didn't really follow NASCAR up to that point. And it was outstanding to see. It still gives me chills when I think about it. But NASCAR, unfortunately to me and many, it seems to be almost a dying breed. I mean, about 15 years ago, it was an up-and-coming sport. They were building so much momentum. Racers had personality, and they would do these amazing, you know, post-game interviews. It was getting a lot of attention. The cars were kind of flashy. The crashes were insane. But I think something happened along the way where they tried a little too hard to make it catchy by changing the rules. And that's what confused me. It used to just be you won, you got the points, and at the end, whoever had the most points of the season, you were the winner. But now there's, you know, lap points awarded if you're winning a certain amount of laps, and there's chunks within the race that are mini races, and it's too confusing to follow. And the score bug on the side is jumping all around of essentially three or four different races within the race. It just doesn't make any sense. And for, you know, casual watchers or race fans that maybe just want to check in on the biggest race of the year, which is the Daytona 500, they're lost. They don't know what's going on. And for that reason, I'm out on NASCAR.
Yeah, the stage set up as they have it, where you know, most races are broken in three stages. It is a little confusing. And the playoff system, you know, I'm not a huge fan of it. It doesn't always reward the best driver of the year with the championship, right? Kevin Harvick is the one I kind of follow, the number four car. A couple years ago, he had won something like, I don't know, eight races or something like that, like, which normally in a normal season probably puts you number one for the season standings, right? And the last race of the season, it's basically down to four drivers, and whoever finishes in the best position on that last race pretty much wins the championship. So, you know, he had won, I think, like I said, something like seven, eight races. It was a really high number, and didn't even win the season championship. So I agree with you. I don't like that stage setup. I don't like the playoffs. It is confusing.
Yeah. When I went, I was like 17 years old, and I always wore the number six. So I was like, I'm just going to, whoever the sixth racer is, that's who I'm going to follow. And I think it was Mark Martin at the time. So I went down there, and I was like, I'm going to buy all this Mark Martin merchandise, and I'm going to wear it, because that's what you do when you're at NASCAR. Funny enough, though, he was sponsored by Viagra. So I was a 17 year old wearing a Viagra hat and a Viagra t-shirt. I thought that was pretty cool. Now, the NHL is now past the midway point, and we need to start thinking about playoffs, and that will be our T5. Today, we will have a peek at the Eastern Conference, who looks to have all eight teams ready for the playoffs. But in what order will they finish, and who will each of them play in the first round? That is the question. Carolina, New York Rangers, Pittsburgh, Washington from the Metro, Tampa Bay, Florida, Toronto, and Boston from the Atlantic. Mike, which way are you leaning for the front runner out of this group?
Now, wait a minute. You're kicking the Red Wings out.
Red Wings, Columbus? No, they don't got a chance of catching the wild card. Sorry.
I mean, they are going into this week. They're 8 points behind Boston for eighth. Right now, I think it looks like it's going to be hard to catch Florida, maybe, for the top seed. Carolina could do it. Carolina is a good team, but I think one of those two teams will probably win their divisions and be one and two. I don't think you could pick one with any real certainty right now.
Yeah, I mean, all eight teams really have a chance of winning the conference and going on to winning the Stanley Cup. It's the first time in a long time you could really say that about one specific conference when everyone really has a chance. The Atlantic is stronger, I think, than the Metro, but mainly due to really goaltending. You got Vasilevskiy, Bobrovsky, and then obviously Campbell in Toronto. Three top goalies in the entire league, all in one division. That makes it nuts. Florida holds the top spot. Carolina top spot in the Metro. As I mentioned, Columbus, Detroit, they're out. So really, we know the eight teams. Now, the trade deadline, that's what's going to make this conference interesting. Teams are going to start going after the same players, trying to kind of one-up each other. They can't all add a power forward or a top four D-man. There's not enough of them out there. So who's going to go out and give that extra draft pick to go get that player to enhance their team? And then how do the other teams counter once they see, you know, a Carolina make a trade for a top six player, or the Leafs go out and get a top four defenseman? The deck chairs are already starting to shift around. We've seen Montreal make a trade to Calgary. The Leafs made a trade this weekend, but that was more about moving cap space, of getting Richie out and getting out from underneath of his money for the next 2 years. So we'll see how the Leafs are able to handle that. But you know what? There's a lot of question marks amongst these eight teams, and that's going to kind of be the interesting thing on how it plays out over the next 3-4 months. Can Anderson have a strong playoff for Carolina? Because he hasn't had one yet. Does Sid and Malkin, do they have one more run in them for Pittsburgh? Can Washington make a move for a goalie at the deadline? Because that's what they're missing right now. Does Tampa Bay stay healthy and stay hot for another long playoff run? Florida, they have zero playoff experience. Will that hold them back as they try to go for their first long run in ages since the rat days on the ice? And of course, the Maple Leafs, do they have what it takes to get out of the first round and finally make a long playoff run?
A lot of good storylines in the Rangers up and coming, their rebuild complete, and they are right in the thick of things. The one thing I wanted to ask you, you know, as a hockey guy, I'm a passive fan, as mentioned. Do you like this new format of the playoffs that they've had for the last handful of years? It typically, you know, in the past, 1-8, 2-7, highest seed, you know. Now the emphasis, obviously, is winning your division is very important. But if you look, I mean, as of today, Tampa Bay-Toronto is the matchup. Pittsburgh Rangers is the matchup. You're going to lose two very good teams in the opening round. And I mean, for argument's sake, I looked, what does 1-8 look like? Tampa's third, Toronto's sixth. So I suppose it really doesn't matter today. But I like the old way of it.
Yeah, I'm going to sound like someone who's a Leafs fan is going to be bitter in this situation, especially if they lose in the first round. But there's a chance that the Toronto Maple Leafs organization, who's been around for over 100 years, they're going to end this year with the most points they've ever had in a regular season. And they're going to start the playoffs on the road, which is insane. So, yeah, I do disagree with the format and the way it lays out. I mean, yes, does it make the regular season a little bit more impactful and more reason to go for the division title to give yourself that wild card team in the first round? Yes. So I guess that's a positive. I like the 1-8. I'd even love to see, hell, for 1 year, let's try 1-16 and see how that goes. I think that would be really cool to see as well. But no, I don't like, and I know it's going to be tough this year. And you know, it made me really start to think as we look at these eight teams, you know, if you said, Stark, if you can pick one of these seven teams for the Leafs to play in the first round, who would you select? I might surprise you, Mike. I think I'm going to take the Boston Bruins. Yes, they've beat the Leafs really bad a few times in the playoffs over the last couple decades, let's call it, and those scars are still very visible. But just like Washington in 2018, they had to beat the Penguins and Sidney Crosby to move on and win the cup. And it felt like once they beat Pittsburgh, there was no holding back. The Caps were going to win the cup. Maybe that's what the Maple Leafs need. They need to get over that Boston Bruins hump to make a long run in the playoffs all the way to hopefully a Stanley Cup championship. Boston does not have a goalie. Rask, obviously, retiring. Swayman, still pretty young and unproven. Allmark, he's not really played that much and that well in the NHL. So there is a weakness there in Boston. Do they go make a move? Who knows? Bergeron, he's had some health issues. Their back end is not what it used to be. They're without Chara. Krug left to go to St. Louis. Of course, they can make some moves around the trade deadline. And Marchand, Pasternak, those guys always worry me, especially in the playoffs. They seem to really step up their game. But yeah, it would be a little bit scary. I think I might have to take the whole 2 weeks off of work and lock myself in the basement to make sure that I could cope with a Maple Leafs Boston Bruins playoff series. But I think this is the team that if I could pick anyone, I would want. I don't want to see Tampa Bay. I don't want Florida. I'm nervous of the Pittsburgh Washingtons because of those superstar players we've mentioned. And Carolina, I would not want to play Freddie Anderson because it could come back to bite us in the ass. So give me the Boston Bruins. Now, last week was the first week of our golf pick'em challenge between Mike and I. 10 points for a win, 5 points for a top 5, and 2 points for a top 10. I had Victor Hovland, who finished T4. That's 5 points. I had Justin Thomas, who finished 6, for another 2 points. I'm now with a total of 6. Mike, he had 2 of his 3 players miss the cut, and the other one finished out of the top 10. So Mike, goose egg to start off with a 0. This week, we move to the first stop on the Florida swing, the Honda Classic at PGA National, Jack's Place, and the home of the Bear Trap. Great finishing 3 holes. Last year's winner was Matt Jones. And guess what, Mike? I get the first pick, and I'm going to go with what I think is the biggest name on the list of players playing. Also, local Florida guy. I'll take Brooks Koepka.
Did great things for me last week. I'm going to go with a name that a lot of people are liking as a potential winner this week. Mr. Sungjae Im was my first pick.
You would like him. You got swings that look a lot alike, so I could see that. I'm going with the top guy. He hasn't played up to his capabilities this year to start, but had a great year last year. I'll go with Daniel Berger.
I'm going to go with, I believe he is a local Floridian, Billy Horschel.
Very good. Yeah, he's a Gator.
That's right.
Yeah, always doing the Gator chomp as he's walking down the fairway there.
That's right, yeah.
Billy Horschel. Another guy. Another guy reminds me of you, too. You guys are a lot alike.
No, but the difference, those two guys win. I could barely break 90 or 100.
Sounds like a segment. I'm going with a guy struggling last year, didn't play too much, took some time off, but hopefully has found his game coming into this season. I'll go with Matthew Wolf.
He was a name I had on a list of prospective kind of players. So I'm going to, with my final pick, I'm going to go with a Florida guy again that has struggled, but maybe being at home can put something together this week. Ricky Fowler.
Wow. He's got to start winning if he wants to get to some of these majors and play a little bit longer in the PGA, so we'll see how that goes. We got a classic game of Would You Rather after the break, so stick around. Now, my son is now 5 years old and does not want to play Would You Rather anymore. He rather tell me weird, dirty jokes that don't make any sense. Like, why did the rabbit cross the road? I said, to go to the IHOP. Get it, Mike? IHOP?
Yeah.
He said, no, Daddy, to go down the slide into the poo. But we're going to stick with Would You Rather because it is a great game, and we're going to start it off with a really good one. Mike, we both love golfing and think it would be the greatest job in the world. But would you rather play on the PGA Tour, grinding every week? Or would you rather take the guaranteed money in and play in the Saudi Super Golf League?
Am I kind of near the leaderboard, or am I just kind of a journeyman on tour?
You're a journeyman on tour. You know, you get a couple of chances here and there, but you're playing regularly.
Okay.
You got a card.
I mean, you know, I would probably stick to the PGA. Just that's, you know, where most guys are probably going to stay, and the prestige and the history of the PGA Tour. The money, obviously, in the Super Golf League would be very tempting, especially if you're not winning much on the PGA, but I'll stick with the PGA Tour and try and sneak in to win a master somehow.
This one's a no-brainer for me. It's the PGA. The grind is fine. I'm still making millions on the course and probably making a ton off the course with sponsors. I get to travel to beautiful courses in North America. I'm treated first class at every event. I don't need my NFTs or highlights. No other pro athlete gets those anyway. The leagues own them. Phil. And there's only 40 golfers playing all 4 rounds every week. I think that would get a little bit boring, and the lack of storylines would make it disinteresting. Plus, how long is this actually going to last? I mean, let's take a look at it. I mean, you got XFL, there was the WHA, there was the ABA. I mean, all these leagues tried, and they were either forced to close or merge. And if this league folds after 2 years, you can't come back to the PGA. You won't be welcomed. So what are you going to do for the rest of your life? You're just going to play a bunch of member guests all over the world and say, I used to be a former professional golfer. Not to mention, is the money really guaranteed? I mean, we've heard about hockey players going over to play in Europe and Russia and not being paid or not being paid the full amounts they were supposed to be. And if they don't pay Phil, is he going to cause a stink and say, I want my money, Saudi government, come and give it to me? I don't think so. They'll just say, get out of here, bud, you're done. So I'll stick with the PGA. Number two, the two teams at the bottom of the NFL standings with 3 and 4 wins were the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Houston Texans. Would you rather take the head coaching job for the Jags, or would you rather take the job for the Texans?
Right now, I'd probably say the Jaguars. They got the first overall pick again this year, 12 draft picks this upcoming season, $56 million, a little more than that in cap space. You got your franchise quarterback and Trevor Lawrence and the opportunity to develop him. Some good players on defense, Josh Allen, Miles Jack, good running backs. You know, there's some pieces there. Obviously, they do need a lot of upgrades, but I think there's some good pieces to work there. So I'd say the Jaguars.
Although I like the hiring of Lovie Smith, they don't have a QB right now. And if I'm taking a job, I want to have top-end talent in the top position, and that is QB. Give me Trevor Lawrence, plus another top pick this year, and we could build something. Lawrence has won everywhere he's played, and I expect him to do the same in the NFL soon. He's a great player. Houston is one of those teams that always has issues, and they are still in it with their QB. Do we even know who their starting quarterback is going to be? Is it going to be Deshaun Watson, Davis Mills, Tyrod Taylor, or some other free agent or trade that they got to make? I mean, and even if Watson says, I'm going to come back and play now that Lovie Smith is there, are they going to accept him? Are the players going to want him on their team and in their locker room? I think it's just going to be a shit show over there. So I'll take the Jags job where no one really cares about what I'm doing in Jacksonville. Number three, we talked about the Daytona 500, and we've also talked about how amazing the F1 TV show is on Netflix. But Mike, would you rather be a NASCAR driver, or would you rather be an F1 driver?
It comes down to safety for me, and you don't have much cover in the F1 cars. You know, your head's kind of exposed and everything, so that would be a big concern for me. And the seats look a little tighter, so I don't know how well I would do in an F1 car. So I'll take the roominess of the stock car in NASCAR and just make left-handed turns.
It's so funny how different we interpret the questions. You're talking about comfort sitting in the cars.
And safety.
Here's my answer. Australia, Italy, Spain, Monaco, France, Belgium, Singapore, Japan, Mexico, Brazil. These are a few of the places F1 drivers race. NASCAR, you have Hicktown after Hicktown, not to mention you drive in the same circle left all time. Just turning left. That's all you do. And no matter what state you're in, you're going to keep turning left. I'll take the F1. Speed, flash, being one of only 20 racers in the world. Not to mention, you instantly become one of the most famous celebrities in the world. The parties look top-notch with the money and famous people. Some of them even are on $100 million yachts. I'll pass on the mud puddle party in South Carolina. Give me the speed of F1. I went for the fun, you went for the comfort. That's just the difference between you and me. Number four, while the MLB has delayed their spring training, it is unclear if the regular season will start on time. But who has the leverage right now? Mike, would you rather be an MLB owner or an MLB player?
I don't know so much about the leverage of things. I think I'd rather be an MLB player. you know, right now it's the owners have a lot of work to do in negotiating these things and figuring out how to get back to baseball. And, you know, I'm sure the player groups are a part of that. But for me, you know, I would rather focus on getting myself ready to play, hopefully at some point this season, and ready to go at any point. Because if they do reach an agreement, you know, it's probably going to be a shorter preparation period. So you got to be ready to go. So from my side, I'd probably rather be a player, work on what I can control right now, and have myself ready to go whenever this gets hopefully sorted out.
I'll go with the owners. They've been handing out massive contracts after massive contracts, over $300 million to multiple players, and these guys are just going to walk away from that? No way. The owners have the leverage. In fact, if the season goes to 150 or even 125 games, they'll probably like that because they might add another playoff game in there, which has the highest TV ticket, cash in their pockets. Players think they're really rich and all that until those paychecks stop coming in every week. Then they'll start being like, uh-oh, what's going on here? Yes, the vets that have made the money, they're fine, but there is a majority that haven't signed those big tickets yet, or they just signed them and haven't actually gotten that money. They want to see it, and they want to be able to hold it. So I think they'll be the first ones to fold. I'd rather be the owner. Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. I had John Rahm finishing top 10, and he finished T21, three shots back of 10th spot. While Mike had Michigan State, and that didn't go as planned. But hey, back off. We gave you two plus money prop bets for the Super Bowl that did cash, and we're getting back on track today, and I have the tee. And my pick is going to be Saturday, February 26th. The Toronto Maple Leafs head to Detroit to play the Red Wings, and I'm taking the Leafs in regulation. The Maple Leafs will probably be around minus 110, maybe even plus money in a regulation win, and I think they're going to win it because 3 weeks ago, they went into Detroit, scored 5 goals in the third to win it in regulation, and cash for me at plus money. I love jamming it down the throats of all those Red Wing fans out there in my life. So go Leafs, go in regulation on Saturday.
Okay, I'm going to stick with college basketball. I need to get a win and get back on track, so I'm taking the number 4 ranked Purdue Boilermakers. They go to Michigan State on Saturday afternoon, and I'm going to take Purdue to win.
On the money line. Your money line guy. I like it. Spread's not out yet anyway. Okay, we want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts,
can't lose.
Oh, yeah.